You are listening to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. We will be coming to you each and every day with uncensored, in-depth analysis of everything you need to know to win your fantasy leagues this season. You can follow us on Twitter, at Fantasy Benefits, or join the Facebook discussion groups, www.facebook.com/groups/Friends of Fantasy Benefits. Give us a 5-star review on iTunes, and send us a copy or screenshot of it to friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com or on Twitter, at Fantasy Benefits, for a chance to get into one of our listener leagues or other prizes. Enjoy the show. Welcome to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I'm Justin Mason, lead fantasy writer and analyst from friendsoffantasybenefits.com. Joining me on another Prospect Minute is Matt Thompson. Matt, how you doing?
Oh, man, I'm good. Got down to our last two teams. We worked through this. Pretty good series we got going here. And are you ready to feel like really especially old? I mean, we're talking about a lot of like young kids in a lot of these, but like this one makes you feel really old. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, this is the top
guy we're bringing up, so...
This is our last one, you know. We still have to go back and record one that will be coming out the day before this one. But as far as listeners concerned, this is the last Prospect Minute.
Saving a pretty good system for last, so
yeah, it just happened to work out that way. So
got a little bit for everybody here.
Yeah, before we jump in, I want to remind everybody you can reach Matt on Twitter at Matt Thompson or Matt Tomp FWFB. Reach me on
MD Tomp FWFB. Yes.
Sorry, yes, MD Tomp FWFB. You reach me on Twitter at Justin Mason FWFB. I'm going to say I am a little distracted because I am participating in a mock draft while we record this. So I will try my best to stay focused on you, Matt. And but you're going to be giving the majority of the information anyways. So you know. I might chime in here and there.
It's all good, man. How many minutes do you get per pick in this league? What's the rundown?
It is a 10-team mock draft for the Mock Draft Army run by Howard Bender. So if you heard one of the earlier episodes, the Yankees preview with Howard Bender, he talked about it. I'm in a 10-team mock. I had the first pick, took Mike Trout, and now I'm waiting for my second and third round picks. I have absolutely no strategy except for I think I'm just going to punt pitching.
Trey Turner, man.
Not going to happen. So let's jump into the Toronto Blue Jays and talk about their guys. Let's start with guys who are close to the major leagues. Anybody close that's going to have an impact?
This system has got a lot of interesting guys like in this realm. I guess the first guy I'll start with, not necessarily like the biggest impact guy. I mean, he had a lot of hype. Coming into this summer, and everybody was like, "Oh, where's Lourdes going to sign?" And Lourdes Gurriel ended up signing with the Blue Jays for $22 million. Wasn't as really much as everyone was kind of hyping him up for. You know what I mean? He ended up getting less than half of what Moncada got, which I thought was interesting because Gurriel, not that he was viewed any time as the same talent, but I think the hype for some of the Cuban guys gets a little out of control sometimes, and Gurriel happened to be the next best thing, and he happened to be pushing the age limit. He turned 23, so he wasn't subject to the bonus pools. So the Blue Jays swooped in and nabbed him for $22 million, but I think his workouts were a little bit disappointing from everything I've read. So based on that price tag, they would have to be.
Yeah, I think that was what people said. People originally, when they were kind of talking about him before people had really seen him, I think they kind of overblew what his ceiling was.
Yeah.
And so people now are thinking that he doesn't even necessarily project as a major league regular.
That's true, but like, you know, a lot of his backstory is very interesting. Like, he's the Gurriel family. Like, if you're not familiar, like in Cuba, they're like baseball royalty, is how I keep seeing it written. Like, that's like, you know, his dad of the same name was a superstar player. Obviously, everyone knows his brother in Houston, Yulieski. So, I mean, with this guy, like you said, I think a bench bat is what everyone seems to say. The defensive versatility is one of his top traits. He does have decent power potential. I'd question the hit tool, and the arm strength is good enough to play anywhere. So I think he can be a starter for a non-competitive team, but a competitive team, he's a utility guy.
Okay. What about other guys? Anybody else interesting that's close?
You like Rowdy Tellez, big first baseman?
Part of me wants to, because, you know, I love the long ball, just like every girl.
Yeah, hey, well, chicks dig it, right?
Yeah, chicks dig it.
I think Tellez, I'll call him either one because I'm not sure which one. He's a 30th round pick in 2013, so it's really cool to see guys like this like turn into something. 6'4", 220, big dude, similar to Dan Vogelbach in the frame. He's a little better. Well, Vogelbach's a better hitter, but I think Tellez definitely has more power. In Double A this year, 297, 387, 530 slash, 917 OPS. That's really good. 29 doubles, 23 homers. I don't know really with the signing of Morales to a long-term deal if that's going to affect Tellez this season. I mean, Morales isn't exactly the most consistent player. You know what I mean? Even though he has been a lot better in the last couple of years. But you look at Tellez, he had a slow start last year. They're trying to get him to be, you know, lose some weight. He's a fringy defender, so I think he's a DH, so I think it's going to be him and Morales. Morales got a 3-year deal, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
So that's going to eat into Rowdy's ETA a little bit there. But he's a mistake hitter with plus power. The hit tool is average. He's going to struggle against lefties. But he's an interesting guy to know. He's probably a back-end top 100 guy for me, just because of the proximity and the hit tool. And the power combination, but he's not going to offer you anything in the speed, and he's a liability at first base defensively, so kind of limits the ceiling a little bit.
All right. What about, like, Alford? Is he coming up anytime soon?
Yeah, man, I'm not a – Anthony Alford's a really, really tough player to evaluate for me. Obviously, everyone knows the background. If you don't, former college football player at Southern Miss. He came to first day of camp at Southern Miss as a quarterback, quickly got turned to defensive back. So obviously you know the athleticism. The speed is plus, but it's not plus. You know what I mean? It's in the weird in-between range. I questioned the hit tool last year in high A, which admittedly is in the Florida State League a notorious pitching environment, only at 236. Not great. He was hurt all year, battled some wrist injuries, some hamstring injuries. The OBP was still strong, 344 despite the 236 average, 18 steals despite the injuries. So I think the stolen bases are a really nice thing. He's really prone. He had a knee injury, I'm sorry. And then he had a concussion and an outfield collision in June. So it was kind of a lost year. But he still managed 18 steals and only 339 at-bats. I do think he's a starting outfielder in the future. He's, like I said, he's not a true burner, but he's still a plus runner for me. The power is a question mark, too. It did improve this year. A lot of more extra base hits than normal in the sample size we dealt with. He's a rough defender right now, below average arm, but I do think he's a speed candidate, but I just wish I need more certainty in the hit tool. You know what I mean? I think it bounces back. I think he's going to have a big year this year, so there might be a little buy low window here if you're into this type of player.
Okay. Max Pentecost, you know, is he ever going to reach major leagues?
I do think so, but I question what position he's really going to be. I guess they're working him back into a catcher this spring. He had a couple shoulder injuries that kind of destroyed him. I liked him coming out of little known Kennesaw State as an offensive first catcher, strong plate discipline.
Didn't he have Tommy John?
It was shoulder injuries, I believe.
Okay. I thought it was TJ.
No, it was shoulder. But I think he had two shoulder operations. the first one didn't take, and he had to have it again. So that kind of scares, you know, that's not the best prognosis. I liked him a lot, like I said, coming out of college. I thought he was good enough to be a catcher, but he had fringy arm strength, and he might be even worse than that now. But he had a very, very nice offensive season, considering he missed all of 2015 and most of 2014. Like I said, 2016, he slashed .302, .361, .486 across two levels A-ball. He was primarily the DH, which isn't the most exciting thing. But again, it's really difficult for me to find a position for him. He played only DH this year. He didn't even play the field. Because if he's not a catcher, I don't know where he profiles at, because I don't think he has enough power to play first. So It's a weird thing. I mean, I hope everything works out for him. I was really high on Pentecost. The plate skills are still there. To hit 300 in two pitchers' leagues after missing a year and a half is encouraging. And he showed some power. I mean, 486 slug is nothing to sneeze at. So hopefully that translates. So the book's not closed on Pentecost, but I dropped the ceiling quite a bit because I don't know if he can catch.
Okay. Anybody else that's close to the majors we should keep an eye out for?
Harold Ramirez, probably a fourth outfielder, guaranteed to be a fourth outfielder type. Don't get too excited. He's only going to hit about 5 to 10 homers. He's a line drive swing, 220-pound, 5'10 guy, kind of short and squatty. Probably can't play center. Definition of a tweener. Good hit tool. That's the best tool. 311 average last year and after a trade in double A. Doesn't strike out. Doesn't walk terribly much, but he's an aggressive hitter, and it's paid off. He's hit for some average, so he's a nice role player to watch out for. That's almost it, though, for as far as they got. Toronto's got a couple relievers. Danny Barnes is going to spend some time in the majors. Chad Girodo, Jose Espada probably gets up there. A lot of relievers for this team. Glenn Sparkman, a Rule 5 pick from Kansas City, I like. He's got a backhand and swingman profile. He'll touch the majors this year, but a lot of their talent is in the lower rungs, so, and it's a lot of it. So that's their strength.
All right, well, let's talk about those lower rungs. What do you see from what do you see as like kind of talent that's farther away but has some upside?
Do you want me to start with the big chief, or do you want me to do a little of those supplemental guys?
Let's start with the big chief, because
All right. You
said you're going to drop a comp on me that is going to wow me.
Yeah, to be fair, it's not my comp. It's Baseball America's comp, and they are the industry standard when it comes to this stuff. So if you don't subscribe to BA, you should. But I don't want to get too into it because it is a subscription website, but I will tell you the comp. The hit tool is a 60. The power tool is a 70. He's a third baseman now. It was kind of one of those deals. We're talking about Vlad Guerrero Jr., obviously, if I didn't, if I buried the lead a little bit there.
You did.
But Vlad Jr., he's a badass, to put it frank. Looks just like his dad with braces. So go to the MILB.com site. You can see that. But they let him sign. When they signed him, they traded couple players, actually some useful prospects to the Dodgers, Tim LoCastro and Chase DeYoung, to the Dodgers just for straight bonus money so they could afford to sign him without penalties. So they signed Guerrero for $3.9 million. His father got a bonus for $2,100. So this shows you a different time. He got quite a bit more money than his pops at that time. But they signed him. It's all bat. The tool that what they were thinking of when they got him was, hey, they just want him to hit. So they kind of let him pick his position you want him to play. One of those rare situations, they just say, hey, where do you want to play? They want him to feel as comfortable as he can, adapting to pro ball, becoming a pro hitter. He's only 17, which is absolutely amazing when I tell you the stat line for him, because as a 17-year-old, playing in these levels is crazy. But they let him play third. He's probably going to play first. The comp that Baseball America dropped on him was Edwin Encarnacion.
Wow.
And that is a bona fide top three-round fantasy player for, the last 5 years?
Mm-hmm.
That is an impressive comp, and to be honest with you, it makes perfect sense. If you think you project it out, because Encarnacion in his past has put up stronger averages than he has, but I mean obviously he's got a lot of power. But here's the stat line for 17-year-old Guerrero. He's still 17, by the way. Doesn't turn 18 till March. 17-year-old Guerrero did this last year in rookie league: 271, 359 OBP, 449 slug, 12 doubles, 3 triples, 8 homers, and was 15 for 20 stealing bags. 35 strikeouts and 33 walks.
This is a little bittersweet for me because this is a guy I talked about last year as a dynasty stash. And I picked him in a supplemental draft, I think in the second or third round. And I believe I dropped him at one point. And now the guy who just won the league has him stashed on his roster.
Well, maybe he's got a deep roster when for some reason wasn't able to keep him.
Yeah, no. Unfortunately not. But so,
but we're looking at a guy here in Guerrero. I'm sorry to rub this in your face. Above average hit tool, obviously, with the 60 grade on it, it's plus. Double plus power. I mean, you're going to look at a guy who's going to hit 280, 270, 280, depending on how much power he truly sells out for. I'm going to put a baseline 30 homers. If he sells out for more power, it's going to hurt the average, but he can hit 40. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Toronto is a hell of a place to hit. And initial reports actually suggest that Guerrero actually might spend a little time at third in the beginning of his career. And Encarnacion did the same thing. He's going to be – the defense isn't going to be that great. The range is okay, but the arm is plus as well, just like Pops. So – He's not as athletic as his father. That's the one knock. But I think the hit tool and the power is going to be on that level. So, all right. And can I stand on a little soapbox for a second?
Sure.
His father is not a Hall of Famer.
Just stop it.
Yeah. But okay.
He is a Hall of Famer.
He's in the Hall of Very Good. But,
How dare you. For the guy who was clamoring that it was unbelievable that Jim Edmonds fell off the ballot last year.
Yeah, it is. If you compare their numbers side to side, for Edmonds to fall off the ballot, and I'm not saying Edmonds is a Hall of Famer because he's not.
But he's not. For Edmonds, you're right.
Edmonds to fall off the ballot his first year was a joke. But that's okay.
I don't think he should have fallen off, but I also think that Vlad is a Hall of Famer. So.
Well, I'll agree to disagree.
Yeah, let's move on.
Don't at me.
Feel free to at me. let's move on. Any other guys that are high upside but far away?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how excited you get about a pitcher in the Toronto system, but Sean Reed Foley is a guy. He's in two levels of A-ball at notorious pitcher leagues, but 115 innings, only allowed 78 hits, 130 strikeouts. It's over one per inning for you not math people like me. Kept hits down to a minimum, and the whip, he doesn't walk guys. Reed Foley, I think, projects as a fantasy number two, but I hate the ballpark and I hate the division. So I'm going to knock him down a little bit in that aspect. So I think he's a high-end three, but he's got real power stuff, upper 70s curveball, mid-80s slider. Fastball's at 92, 94, but it touches 97, but obviously when he touches 97, he loses more command. He has a changeup. It's clearly his fourth offering, but it can be average. So I think Sean Reed Foley is a really interesting arm to pay attention to in fantasy circles.
Okay.
So, know that name. Another pitcher, Connor Green. He might have the best stuff in the entire system. Just the command is nowhere near where it should be yet. And the strikeouts kind of weren't that great, despite the stuff. Green throws 98 miles an hour, sits 93, 97 with the four seamer. He has a two seamer that comes in high 80s, low 90s, gets huge ground ball tilt, a good slider, nice curveball, throws a changeup, got five pitches. I believe he was like a child model when he was a kid growing up, so he's kind of got a lot of ammunition for other opposing fan bases to fire at him when they're heckling him. But seventh round pick out of California, the Blue Jays do very well. They scout California extremely heavily. Roddy Tellez, we mentioned earlier, was out of the same area in the same draft, and he went much later. And he's knocking the door down himself. But I really like Green. I think he has slightly lower upside. He has a higher upside than Reed Foley does. But I think the floor is lower, too, so it kind of brings him down a little bit. But if he gets that command on tap, he's another future number two starting pitcher. But again, same situation. It's the division. Do you want to gamble on too many arms there? That division kind of scares me. That ballpark scares me. So I look at it as a launching pad. Maybe that's wrong. But I don't like pitchers to pitch in that environment too much.
Yeah, that's understandable. I mean, I think, you know, there have been plenty of examples of guys who've been able to keep the ball in the ballpark, but it is, you know, it's the AL East, it's Rogers Center, so yeah, understandable.
Yeah, I guess another pitcher. Well, before I get into their draft, I really liked their draft this year. It was outstanding draft. I thought it was one of my favorites. Justin Mace is a nice back end guy. Gets a lot of ground balls and strikeouts. Strikeouts aren't really there right now. For some reason, they took a big dip, but the ground balls went up. So maybe he's working on things in the minor leagues. You never can tell by just looking at the stat line. So he's still a guy to look at. Angel Perdomo is a nice left-handed arm, nice back-end starter. Reese McGuire is still around. I don't think he's fantasy relevant, but he's going to get playing time because of the glove in the future. So that's worth knowing. But I guess now is a nice – Richard Urena also is a shortstop. I don't like the hit tool as much as other shortstops. I think he's not going to approach the 300 levels for batting average, which is what he needs, because the power is not going to be as good as some of the other shortstop prospects that we've been harping on in the past here during this whole series. But I think 270 with like 10 to 12 homers is there. And with the depth of the position, I don't know how playable that is. That sounds weird to say that a shortstop that hits 270 with 10 to 12 homers isn't going to be playable, but it might not be. You know what I'm saying? With the talent at the position now. Mm-hmm. He's still going to need another couple years in the minors. I don't think he comes up till 2019, but it's a name to follow. And I guess now's a good enough time to get into their draft, huh?
Yeah, definitely.
I like their draft a lot. Their number one guy, TJ Zeuch, or Zeuch. It's Z-E-U-C-H is the last name. Mm-hmm. He's a really big strikeout guy, a really big ground ball guy. The frame is massive. You're looking at a kid... I lost it. 6'7", 225. Strikeout numbers kind of took off as, you know, they made the nice progression in college, 6.6 up to 9.2, up to 9.5 last year, cut the walks, got a heavy ground ball tilt. 90 to 94 on the fastball, excuse me, with really plus sink, peaks at 96, 97, average or better slide or curveball that flashes plus, a cutter slider hybrid. And he has a changeup that flashes above average. It's legit four pitches. And another nice thing, he's young for his draft class. So TJ Zeuch is a guy that I really like. But again, it's a Blue Jays pitcher, so you got to kind of take that for what it's worth. Remember Dante Bichette?
Mm-hmm.
His younger son, Bo, he has another Dante Bichette Jr. is in the Yankee system. Bo Bichette is an outstanding hitter. I really like the package here. Defensively, he doesn't really have a home. They're playing him at short. I don't think he can stick there. I think it's pretty unanimous that he's not. I know it was only 82 at-bats, but he hit 427, 451, 732 in rookie ball. That is insane. For you, 1,100 OPS, over 1,100 OPS, as an 18-year-old playing against other 18-year-olds, which is still fucking good. So keep that name in mind. He's going to be a shortstop, probably play second base. Oh, he's a shortstop now, probably going to be second base, maybe third baseman. And I think he has the bat to carry over and survive that position switch. You're looking at a guy plus to double plus raw power and plus bat speed. Really good launch angle. So I think I've seen him comp to Michael Franco. And I think Bichette's going at a nice value in Dynasty Supplement drafts now. That you can take advantage of that. The speed should be average. Kind of funky mechanics on the swing, but it'll play. So Bo Bichette's a nice name. We're back at Kevon Biggio, the Astros, Craig Biggio, his son. Left-handed hitting second baseman on Notre Dame. I'm not sold on the power, but it's a plus hit tool, quick bat, and above average speed, second and a third baseman, so he'll kind of be fighting with Bichette for positions, but he's older. Like I said, Biggio's a college guy, so he'll be ahead of him. Josh Palacios was an outfielder out of Auburn, above average hit tool, above average speed, and above average power. That's a really nice tool. He's going nowhere in drafts I've seen this winter. You can get him really late, nice kid out of Auburn. Then the most interesting guy, well, besides Bichette, is J.B. Woodman. He's an above-average athlete out of Mississippi, another outfielder, another college guy. They go kind of college-heavy, except for Bichette here in their draft. It was a nice draft. Above-average or better arm, so he's going to stick in the outfield, or probably center field or right. Good enough range for center. Above-average to plus raw power with good bat speed, so that's like might as well be pornography to me because the bat speed with the plus raw power. Also has above average speed, and he's athletic enough. The hit tool is a question for me, but I think it comes around. So that's another really, really good name. And then Zach Jackson's a minor name to know. Kid out of Arkansas, another big, good college performer. 90-94 in the fastball, gets it up, nice curveball, good changeup. So he's got a really got some delivery issues, but he should be a guy too. So the system is pretty deep in talent. I'm there's a couple other guys I didn't touch on. Ryan Barucci is a nice arm. Francisco Rios is probably nice mid rotation to four guys, forward starters. It's a really good system, and Toronto has a huge influx of talent. They're in a weird situation with their major league club right now, losing Encarnacion. Bautista and Donaldson are still there, but you wonder how long that goes for. So the future is still bright, but I think they're in a little bit of a transition period, so we'll see.
All right. Well, that's going to wrap us up for this episode. Again, you can reach Matt on Twitter at MDTomFWFB. You can reach me on Twitter at JustinMasonFWFB. And I am murdering this mock draft right now.
That's good. Who you got? A quick rundown.
Quick rundown. It's gone weird because, I mean, I'm trying to concentrate on doing the podcast and not get auto-drafted at the same time. Let's see. I went Trout, then Bumgarner and Correa in the second and third. Okay. In the fourth, fifth, I went Jonathan Villar and Giancarlo Stanton. I figure I figure in a 10-team league with replacement value, I can go for upside.
Yep, so Stanton is on the board.
Right. Otherwise, yep. I mean, there's no way I would take Stanton in the top 50 otherwise. But no. Considering, you know, the upside there, I'm just going straight upside, I think, this whole draft.
You and me have similar views on Stanton.
I do. Yeah. That's for another podcast, though.
Definitely.
Let's see. In the 6-7, I took Britton and Lester.
That's can't argue with that.
And then 8-9. I just took Billy Hamilton and Todd Frazier.
Oh, wow. That'll play.
Yeah. So I like the team. But it's a 10-team league. So, I mean it's going to be a team. You know, most teams are going to have studs all over. So, but, yeah, so far, so good. If you give us a 5-star review, like I'm giving of my draft right now.
Yeah, me too.
But you do it on iTunes, and you send me a screenshot either on Twitter at Fantasy Benefits or via email, friendsfantasybenefits@gmail.com. Make sure you get into a listener league. We're eligible for other prizes. Yeah, that's going to wrap us up for this episode. For Matt and myself, thank you for listening. A fantastic baseball season.